Welcome to We Are the Watchers. Tom. And Leah. Are the Watchers.
This is episode 40 of We Are the Watchers.
Over the hill.
When we get to 52, that's going to be a huge milestone for us.
Why is that?
Just because it's a year.
Oh, sure. I didn't connect that point.
Just because it's a year, and I think that means that we've done good, kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
High fives all around.
Absolutely.
Anyway, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
No,
it's a way off yet.
That's a whole 12 episodes away. We've got lots of stuff we've watched today. Well, this week. We've got some newsy stuff. You've got a lot of newsy stuff.
I've got a lot of news. A lot.
And we've got another listener's quiz suggestion that
Excellent.
We'll get to. So we'll do all of that and try and do it all really quickly for you so that you can listen to it on your way to or from work.
Yeah. Bite size.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's crack into the news. There's been quite a lot of it. We both were chatting just before we pressed record about the Winona and Keanu supposed marriage.
Yeah. So when they were in Romania shooting Bram Stoker's Dracula back in, I want to say somewhere like 92?
Yeah, I'd say about that.
It was a bit of the vampire height craze height.
Yeah.
Interview with the Vampire, and Anne Rice was pumping out the Lestat novels.
And when you think about it, those two movies had a lot of big stars from that time, and stars that are still really big today.
Gary Oldman.
I know, right?
Yeah. So in the film, they get married, and apparently they wanted it to be so realistic and stuff. They got a proper Romanian priest who maybe didn't understand that this was for film.
So perhaps
they're actually married.
Now, have those two gotten married in real life? I mean, separately? I don't think Winona's been married. She's been engaged definitely to Johnny Depp.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time, I think, I forget which one it was. It was either Matt Damon or Ben Affleck. I feel like it was Matt Damon.
I think it was
though.
Matt Damon.
Were they engaged or just...
I can't remember.
It was a long time
ago.
Keanu Reeves, I know...
I don't think he married his
girlfriend.
Who passed away.
That was a very sad story.
Yep.
She died in a car crash,
yes.
Mate? Yeah, that's right. And I don't think he's been... Well, at least not publicly with anybody else. So the whole time these two could have been married. It is the 90s relationship that has endured the test of time.
That's so cool. Well, yeah, they've got a new movie coming out together, and while they were on a press junket for it, someone brought it up and Winona pieced it together. And I think she made the same faces that she did when she was on stage.
Yes, I know the
Emmys?
Exact face.
Yeah,
for Stranger Things.
What? The interview is great because Keanu is just joking throughout the whole thing. If you think it's very funny, at the end it kind of dawns on him that, hang on, this might be a real thing.
And then I really hope he went, whoa.
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 Yeah.
A nice little publicity story, though, for them.
I don't know. Wonderful bit of traction for a film that probably wasn't going to be
a
scene.
You know what? I didn't even read into what the upcoming movie's about. That's how aside it was.
It's a secondary concern.
Exactly. I did see an interesting story about Kevin Spacey, or the curse of Kevin Spacey. So he had a new movie called Billionaire Boys Club.
Yes.
That was supposed to be released, but after all the stuff about him came out, they decided to be pretty low-key about the film.
Mm-hmm.
They still did release it, but really quietly.
I did some maths around this because I was looking into
Me
it.
Me too.
You
all
did
right.
The maths?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's check our findings.
So.
8 cinemas were showing it.
Yes.
It made was projected to make $425 across the weekend, mm-hmm. which works out as 6 viewers at each cinema. Not each showing.
Six. Yeah, obviously you got to feel bad for the other people involved in the movie.
Yeah, there were some big names in it. Taron Egerton, mm-hmm. Ansel Elgort, Emma Roberts, Cary Elwes, Judd Nelson. You know, they're all... Plus the hundreds of people that would have worked on the film.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
All of that's tarnished.
For sure. But I wonder if it's going to be one of those sort of movies that end up getting a cult status because it was so poorly received at the cinemas.
I don't think so, because it's already on iTunes.
It's already got Kevin Spacey curse around it, doesn't it? It's the cloud of Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, and they've pushed it out on video on demand. Like,
yes,
they put it in cinemas,
right.
I think, maybe just so in case there's award consideration, it can go for that.
The video on demand. And was first, wasn't it? Then they put it to the cinemas.
At the same time.
Okay.
So day of release,
yep.
type multi last thing, because if you don't live near one of those 8 cinemas, you don't have a chance of seeing it.
Let's be honest, probably a fair chunk of the population is nowhere near them.
And that's right. And I think it was about 13% Rotten Tomatoes. So it sounds like it was a shitty film anyway. Mm.
I'm not tempted.
Nah, no loss. I'm
not tempted at all. What else did you find in the newsy world?
So Crazy Rich Asians opened to at least $34 million domestically in the States
over
the weekend.
Pretty damn good.
Hugely exceeding the expectations for it. It's the biggest romantic comedy opening since Trainwreck in 2015.
That's 3 years.
Yep.
That's phenomenal.
But more importantly, it's the first mainly Asian-American-led film since 1993's Joy Luck Club.
That's pretty bad.
25 years.
That's too long.
It is. So between that and Black Panther, there's this awesome showing at the moment that diversity in cinema works. Hey, who would have thought?
People will still go and watch the films because they're interested in the story.
I'm pumped for it. My mum read the book and raved about it.
Oh, so it's based on a book?
Yeah, really successful book. And my mum like raved about it properly to me and got me really pumped for it.
I mean, it's obviously going to come out here.
Yes.
But I did see there were a few people behind it who are pushing it, who are quite successful in the world of Hollywood and movies, which is fantastic. And I just wonder if it's... Sometimes I wonder about these stories because they're great feel-good stories, but do they get the big push of cinema goers because of the story or because of the story surrounding the film?
Look, I think it's a combination of the two.
Mm.
I think the story behind it is really strong and that helps. But it was a best-selling novel and, you know, it's a really high production film and it's made properly, so it doesn't look like...
Yeah, it doesn't look indie or anything.
No.
Yeah. Oh, God, it's wonderful that this sort of thing is around, and there's something I have watched over this week that I will talk about a little bit later on that is related to this.
Okay.
In some way.
Sure.
In some way, and sort of leans to the argument that it's not about the ethnicity of the actors or the storyline, it's the story and also how good the actors are at portraying that story.
Yeah.
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 So it's a good, feel good.
Look, one person that's been talking about it a lot is a guy named James Hong,
mm-hmm.
who I promise you would know. I think he's about 89
okay.
and he recently got properly credited as the actor with the most credits to his name, living or dead.
So what sort of stuff would we have known him from?
You'd know him as the father-in-law in Wayne's World 2 with the golden balls.
Yes.
Wayne kicks him in the golden balls. He voiced Mr. Ping, the goose, in Kung Fu Panda Trilogy.
Did he really?
You'd know him from Seinfeld, or he was the bad guy in Big Trouble in Little China.
Mm-hmm.
He's got about 900 credits to his name.
That's a hard-working man.
Yes. So anyway, he's come out saying it's fantastic that Crazy Rich Asians is doing so well. He can't believe it's taken this long.
Yeah, so 25 years.
It's exactly what you mean about people in the Asian community coming out and supporting this film. It's really important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's important that everybody else does as well because this is the kind of stuff that we need. More people involved in storytelling and movies, the better off it is for the audience.
Yeah, different stories.
Exactly.
Their plastic surgeon doesn't want them doing any activity where balls fly at their nose. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
So the new shows and seasons are starting to trickle in over the next couple of weeks.
So who's made it?
Goodness. Because I have been struggling these last few weeks. September 24th-ish is roughly when most shows will ramp up through early October.
Mm-hmm.
So and then there's a few that are coming next year that I'm very excited for, that we got some more news this week. So I'll fill you in on a couple of things.
Excellent.
So we've heard bits and pieces about Watchmen. This is coming from HBO.
Can you give us a quick synopsis about this one again?
Sure. Did you see Watchmen, the film?
I haven't seen the movie.
Okay. I will try and condense this as simply as possible. It's considered one of the most important comic books ever written. It came out in the 80s, and it forced comic books to grow up. So it took a very dark look at comic books.
Mm-hmm.
The catchphrase is, "Who watches the Watchmen?" And it was the idea of, you know, you've got a Justice League or the Avengers. Who patrols and polices them? Because they're so powerful that no one could really stop them. So if they decide to try and change the world,
mm-hmm.
how would they go about doing that? And it's very political. There's a lot of science, very, very heady sort of science about reality and messing with reality to try and improve things for everyone. But there was a film that came out in late 2000s,
mm-hmm.
and it's pretty good. It's a very slavish adaptation of the comic books.
Who is in it? Any names?
Jeffrey Dean Morgan, Arthur Negan.
Okay.
He plays a guy called the Comedian, who is meant to be basically what if Captain America was actually the Punisher.
Oh, right.
Mixed with a little bit of the Joker.
Interesting.
Yes. So he is the Vietnam vet who is crazy and happy to kill for the country.
So which universe does the Watchmen live in?
None of them.
So it's a completely separate universe.
It was made by DC Comics.
Uh-huh.
Recently, there's a storyline going on called Doomsday Clock, where some of those characters are crossing over into the DC universe proper,
mm-hmm.
and everyone needs to find a way to get them back quick because they are awful, awful people.
Mm.
The two most famous characters from it, there's Rorschach, who is a guy who wears a big trench coat and has a white ski mask, but with Rorschach blobs on the front.
He's been, there's everything painful.
And doesn't use full sentences and stuff. And then the other one is Dr. Manhattan, mm-hmm. The Rorschach is meant to be the really dark, logical take of Batman to the nth degree of what if Batman was a real person and had no funds.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Dr. Manhattan is kind of Superman mixed with Hulk type thing of a scientist who gets exposed to nuclear stuff that splits him to a subatomic level, and then he comes back as a blue guy with his dong hanging out the whole time, naked blue guy that floats. And he ends up basically moving to Mars because he wants nothing to do with humanity anymore. And yeah.
And that's where he lives a solitary life?
Kind of solitary, but he perceives all time as happening at the same moment. So
that'd be confusing.
It's very confusing. Yeah. And it makes his wife, they have huge problems and this kind of stuff. Anyway, it's very, very heady stuff.
Mm.
The movie was great. There's a 4-hour cut of the film, which makes more sense because there's a lot to go. Anyway.
Still, 4 hours is a lot. So are you sort of alluding to the fact that television, as in a series, would probably work better for this. Because they've got longer to explain things.
So HBO are bringing out the show next year. They're hoping it to be up there with a Game of Thrones or Westworld.
Amazing.
It's being produced by Damon Lindelof, who was the main guy for Lost.
So we already know it's got HBO as a great backing, and people who have been behind shows
Lost,
that have been
leftovers,
incredibly popular.
Yes. Shows that really love a good psychological take on pulpy genre stuff. So they've said that this isn't going to be a reboot. It's not it's kind of like a remix. So there's going to be new characters existing in this universe. Now, without giving spoilers for the film or the comic, there is a very large event that happens at the end of the film that kind of finds a way to stop war and bring about world peace. So the show is going to be set 30 years later of what are the ramifications of that.
I would imagine HBO would be keen to have it so that if people are just jumping in at the first episode, they don't need to know about the movie.
Correct.
So, I mean, I'm always a big fan of the flashback. If you want to give me a flashback and explain little bits and pieces of how that happened, how those 30 years have evolved within, society, that'd be great. But I also assume that if you do watch a movie, you're going to be pretty well set for the first episode.
Look, I'll make it simple.
Uh-huh.
There's a character named Ozymandias in the comic, in the film, who is basically meant to be Tony Stark, Iron Man. And he fabricates an alien invasion in New York that kills millions of people, but that one act causes world peace because suddenly humanity has to
band together
to fight against something else.
The so-called enemy.
Yes. So 30 years later, will the truth have come to light?
Mm.
This sort of stuff. Mm. I think it's very, very interesting. Jeremy Irons is going to be one of the main characters.
Great.
Yes. So a lot of the casting in Lost style is finding people that haven't been in a lot of stuff before.
Mm-hmm.
So you haven't got preconceived notions as to them and stuff. But Jeremy Irons, that's a get.
That's a big get.
Yeah.
So we've got to wait till next year for that one.
Yes.
Oh, well.
That's going to be up there with a Westworld, a Game of Thrones production levels and this sort of stuff.
Mm.
So expect more news
Exciting.
To come on that one. Yes. Not exactly a show, but I don't know if you remember the Kick-Ass movies. Kick-Ass is a comic book series about a teenage boy who decides, he's read too many superhero comics. Mm-hmm. He decides to dress up and gets a scuba suit and goes out and tries to fight crime. Gets the shit beat out of him. ends up with a metal plate in his head, broken legs and all this sort of stuff.
Goodness.
And because he has so many metal rods put in him, it actually gives him slightly more durability to pain.
Cyborg almost.
A little bit like that. But it's a very postmodern take on the superhero idea. There's another character in the series called Hit Girl, and she is meant to be a 12-year-old girl whose father thought he was the Punisher and trained her to be an assassin.
Wow.
So she was played by Chloe Grace Moritz in the two films.
Mm.
And is a very beloved character, this girl, Hit Girl. So there's a Hit Girl comic that's been launched earlier this year. And it's,
so it's
her
very recent.
Very recent. She goes around the world to different, you know, each four issues is in a different city.
Cool.
Killing people.
That's cool. But still, there's a story behind that.
So Kevin Smith is going to be writing the next arc.
Oh, nice.
They've announced, which is called The Golden Rage of Hollywood.
This guy loves comic books.
He sure does.
I mean, we all know he's got a comic book store, so. Yep.
In this story, he is sending Hit Girl to Hollywood to murder predatory producers.
Wow.
Yeah, they want to make a really timely statement about sexual abuse.
Look, if anything, the great premise to a story, but also, like you said, timely. There's going to be a lot of focus in on this.
Yeah, so I think that was
That's
pretty
exciting.
Cool. Some brief news. Brooklyn Nine-Nine started filming today.
Fantastic.
This is a new season.
Very excited. That's awesome.
Glow just got renewed for season 3.
Wonderful, because I wasn't sure, because it kind of could have ended up as the end. If that was the end of the Glow story, that would have been okay, but it also... It also showed that it could, if they had gotten picked up, it could have gone on to another season. So that's great. I'm excited about that.
Yes, I think that's very cool. So there's a Snowpiercer series coming. Snowpiercer was a film a couple of years ago, again, adapted from a comic book.
Right.
In the future, humanity is all dead except for these people that live on a train, and there's a class system on the train.
I've seen the movie.
Yes, with Chris Evans.
Yes.
Yes.
So I didn't mind it. Some people...
Oh, I
disliked
it
a lot,
loved
but
it.
I thought it was a really cool take on, you know, that sort of dystopian apocalypse,
look,
almost sort of.
It was a Korean director, and it felt like a Korean film because it wasn't super uplifting and all this sort of stuff.
Didn't need to be.
No. So the film series that's coming, guess who's going to be one of the major stars?
Chris Evans?
Nope.
Oh, who?
Your friend and mine, Stephen Ogg.
Yes!
Yep, Simon from Walking Dead, a.k.a.
Trevor
Phillips. I look forward to him. Apparently he's going to play, something of a stretch, a career criminal.
What?
I know, who would have thought?
Why isn't he the main good guy? Has he ever been a good guy?
I'm sure he has at some point.
Some point in time.
Simon started out seeming... pretty amiable.
Hmm.
He was very happy to make deals with Gregory.
He just had enough, though.
Yeah, we all get there. Vice announced that they have renewed Most Expensivest with 2 Chainz for 20 more episodes, season
20.
3.
20?
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
That's as many episodes as they've had so far, I think.
Brilliant.
Yes. And they're rebooting another show they have called Bon Appetit.
These names are just phenomenal.
Isn't it? This is a guy that goes around testing out different weed food. They're rebooting it, so now it's a weed cooking competition show hosted by B-Real from Cypress Hill.
My goodness, what a get.
I know, 1,000% yes.
How many brownies are going to be baked?
Oh, all of them. B-Real's going to be the most. Always Sunny dropped. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia dropped their trailer for season 13. Drop their trailer. All they're doing is just taking the piss out of different horror movies.
They don't have to do anything that is standard.
No.
Well, they're 13 seasons in. They've got such a huge fan base. They could do whatever the hell they want.
That's right. Their tagline this season is Sunny the 13th, and every bit of promotional is based on different horror movies.
That's so good.
Very, very clever.
That's so fun.
They're still being cagey as to whether Dennis will be in a lot of the episodes.
Yeah, right.
Because he's obviously over on AP Bio, which also got renewed for season 2.
Oh, cool.
I reckon
cameos. He'll be in a few.
I've heard whispers that he's in pretty much every episode.
Oh, no way.
But not necessarily him, that the character of Dennis is in every episode. So they may... I really hope they have the balls just to have a cardboard cutout of him around.
Yes!
And have him voice things off screen, or like do voiceovers and stuff.
If any show could do it and the fans would be happy with it.
I could see them doing that. I could see them murdering him and having him dead for a few episodes. This sort of, like, they'll have some fun.
Too good.
The only show brave enough to call Scar what he is. A murderer. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
I saw the trailer for The Purge TV show, which is based on the films, where one night a year anything is legal. Get it out of your system. Purge it.
Such a video game, isn't it?
Yep. So it's a 10-episode season. I don't know whether they're looking to do a season two or whether this is just a standalone.
Just wrap it up.
Yeah.
It'd be good if they take a look, like it's the exact same, say, 12 hours or something, but each episode is a completely different character and storyline.
I believe it is going to be a little bit like that.
I like that sort of thing.
That's called a Rashomon style.
One of my favourites.
I think the plan, from what I could see from that trailer, it looks like it's going to be a Lost style thing where everything's happening in the present, but we flash back to see character motivations of why they want to kill that person or what caused them to be angry about this sort of stuff.
That's great.
So that looks cool.
Yeah.
I also saw the trailer for Mayans, which is the spin-off from Sons of Anarchy.
And what'd you think?
Oh, it looks gritty and dramatic and not for me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't keep up with Sons of Anarchy. It's good,
either.
But I just had too much on.
Yeah,
Yeah, same showrunner. I think it's going to be like a Better Call Saul, where it's continuing the story.
It'll have a fan base, and it'd be great if, you know, a few seasons in, it starts to build itself up even more like Better Call Saul. You know, that show is now pretty much a show in itself.
Yep, I saw the trailer for Sharknado 6.
I heard about
this. Which is called The Last Sharknado, It's About Time. Which I reckon that title is probably the funniest thing in the movie because it's a time travel Sharknado film.
Of course it is.
They've got to go back to the beginning of time and stop the first Sharknado. In the trailer, I spotted dragon sharks and a flying shark taking out a T-Rex.
Look, I'm not angry with that.
I'm not watching this shit. I hate it.
I haven't even watched the first one.
They're awful.
I enjoyed the fact that Ian or Ian Ziering, a.k.a. Steve Sanders, was in it, but I like the fact that they exist and that people take them for exactly what they are.
This trailer had a shot of...
Really?
Sorry, people.
You're already exhausted.
It had a shot of them in the year 20,000, and every person alive was a robot Tara Reid.
Oh, no.
And I thought, no, they've travelled to hell. That was awful. So if you enjoy that, more power to you. Well done. Hey, I solved a mystery.
Oh, yeah? What?
Yeah. You know how we were feeling very sorry for our friend Lance Bass that he didn't get his Brady Bunch house?
Yeah, that was a sad story. You know, so who was the buyer?
You're never going to guess.
I assume they're going to make another Brady Bunch.
Nope. Completely wrong. HGTV, Home and Garden Television. They wanted the home because, and I quote, the potential revenue streams and the branding opportunities for the network were obvious. The understanding is that it will begin with HGTV's restoration of the home to 70s perfection. So instead of a new Brady Bunch, they're going to redo it, like completely restore it back to the 70s glory.
Holy cow.
That's cool.
That's a whole season of TV that they've already gotten publicity for before they've even started.
Now, the interesting thing is none of the Brady Bunch was filmed inside that house.
No, it wasn't.
That was all on soundstages.
In fact, if you look at, what do you call them,
the blueprints?
If you look at blueprints of the Brady Bunch, how the set was configured, not only does it not make sense for any house that would ever be able to be built, but it doesn't look anything like that.
No. So it's going to be interesting to see whether the interior of the house is done the same, whether they're going to try and match things to the show, or whether it's just the exterior.
I think they'll try and go full-on 70s interior as well.
I think so too.
Because that's what, as an audience member, I already want to see.
Yeah.
But also, I'm also thinking of a happy ending, Lance can buy it afterwards and live in a 70s Brady Bunch heaven.
Yeah, I like that.
It's win-win for everybody.
I'm sure there will be a sell-off at the end.
Oh, there has to be.
And as you say, Lance might get his chance.
He might get his chance.
But I thought that was a really, that was cool. It wasn't a big, big corporation buying it to tuck it away for maybe making a Brady Bunch reboot.
Yeah.
It is a network that's like, we're going to pin a lot of hopes and dreams. You know, this is the same network that do a lot of the Tiny Paradise and a lot of the
stuff that when you see on television, you watch about five, not even that, maybe 32 seconds to a minute, and then you go, I'm here for the next half hour.
Yeah,
I'm not changing.
Yeah,
the
that's
channel.
Me.
Yeah,
I watch a lot of that rubbish. And then the last story, the
yes.
last news story. Oh boy, I am both excited and appalled in one.
Why?
Liam Neeson's got a new movie.
Oh. I heard about this. Now, can you give us the synopsis? Because it is wonderfully ridiculous.
Sure. So the film is called Hard Powder.
Yeah.
And Liam Neeson stars as a snowplow operator who is the town's darling because last winter he managed to keep the roads safe, keep everyone from crashing and dying.
Now, at this point in time, I'm immediately thinking of Homer Simpson.
Mr. Plow.
Exactly. That's funny.
Someone murders Liam's kid.
What?
And Mr. Plow is out for revenge. In Hard Powder.
How did he get on board with this? But also,
roughly,
it's got Laura Dern in it. So there has to be something gritty about it. It can't just be a ridiculous...
Well, he's done a lot of these lately. He did Nonstop. He did The Commuter. He's very much found his groove as, I'm gravelly and I'm going to kick your fucking ass.
I'm so angry because of everything that's happened to me.
The Grey, which was Liam Neeson fighting wolves, was great.
See, that even that sounds ridiculous.
Is a really good film.
How long ago?
I want to say 2011.
So not too, not too old.
No, not too old, but it's not an easy watch.
Okay.
You're watching someone stave off death
for
not that long.
Okay.
Yeah.
Feel good ending.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am intrigued about how this movie is going to turn out just because of the whole synopsis, the name, Liam Neeson, Laura Dern, it all, I can't, it's like a puzzle that the pieces don't seem to fit together.
Oh, don't look at it as a puzzle. Think of it as a Slurpee.
Okay.
And there's separate frozen elements
yes.
that are going to melt together and form like just glory.
Okay. All right. All right. I'm going to be optimistic about it.
I want them to keep pushing the envelope for jobs that Liam Neeson could have where he's wronged and sets out on revenge. Maybe he's a guy that runs a bowling alley and he starts killing people with pins.
Oh,
and at one point he jams two fingers into someone's eye sockets and one in the mouth and then tries to bowl them.
And you know he could because he's a tall bloke.
Yeah.
I would like to see him as a 7-Eleven owner.
Yes.
And it's in a gang-infested area.
Sure.
And, you know, the gang's trying to take his corner and he's got no time for it.
No.
And he goes out.
Get out of my bodega.
Clean the street. And he's got a broom. And that's his weapon.
Oh, I like a broom. I could see him as a lollipop man.
Oh, yes!
Who just, he decides he's going to put a stop to crime.
We should be in Hollywood.
It's easy, this stuff.
It's almost a crime that we're not. Lot of news. That was good stuff.
Sorry if that was too much news for you. Actually, I'm not sorry.
No, I'm not sorry either. I'm completely happy with it.
Strong enough to lift both Thor and Grandpa's hammer for double avenging. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
I've done a bit of watching of some pretty good stuff this week.
Yeah?
And I condensed it all in this super, like, concentrated time. So it's all sort of melded into one for me.
Oh.
But I'm going to see how I go.
All right, I'm going to strap in and see if I can follow the thought train.
Well, first off, I watched on ABC iView an Aussie drama, pretty recent, I'd say the past month or so. I remember seeing it on television being advertised, called Deadlock. And it's a five-parter.
Yes.
And each episode focuses on a different character. But it's
okay.
All a story. Now, I'm not going to give anything away because I'm pretty sure they give it away in the very in the trailers itself. But the first episode focuses on this girl who ends up in a car crash and dies.
Oh.
That's that episode. Then every subsequent episode focuses on a different character who may or may not have been directly involved in what happened. But they all, whether they realize it or not, had a slight, it was like butterfly effect, really, slight impact of how she got to that point.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
cool.
It's really cool. And it's all sort of within, I don't know, not very long a time. They did a few flashbacks back to the actual night of the event, just so you can get a bit of an idea of who these people are. But yeah, really cool. Australian, obviously teen-based drama in that there are teens in it. But I could see also people probably in their 20s enjoying it as well. Some of the writing, like the script, the lines are a bit lame.
Sure.
But it's beautifully beautifully filmed, and the whole premise and how they structure it is very clever.
Okay,
and cool. It's Aussie, so
nice,
amazing. Another one I watched, and I wondered if you caught it as well on Netflix. Disenchantment.
No,
came out, and I watched the first two episodes. It's such a great art style. It's a, you know how with The Simpsons they're very bright. It's primary colours.
Yes,
this is a little more pastely.
Okay.
Not that it's 100%
obvious.
So
like more obvious. Like Futurama style?
Even a little more so.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say. But the...
Would I be guessing lots of like pastel greens and pinks and that sort of stuff?
Exactly.
Okay, the fantasy colours.
Exactly.
Sure.
And there was this real... when they showed like the village or the town where the castle is, it almost looked as if it had been hand-painted, you know, like old school.
Okay, yeah.
I really liked it. Some of the standout actors are Abby Jacobson, obviously, from Broad City.
Yes.
Who is awesome. You got Eric Andres in it. He's very good.
Good.
Nate Faxon. And I went,
I know Nate Faxon.
I recognize this
guy.
He
wrote something... No.
Most recently I saw him in that Netflix show, Friends from College or College Friends or whatever it was called. The one with Fred Savage in it.
Yeah. He and the guy that was the dean on Community.
Oh, right.
Those two paired up and wrote something that won an Oscar for George Clooney.
I'm going to have to look into that. That's an intriguing thing.
Uh-huh.
Also, someone you would like, Matt Berry, is in it as a prince.
Fuck!
He just does that voice.
Good.
That's the voice he does. Exactly.
Welcome.
Exactly.
My kingdom.
I know you're going to like it, Tom.
Yeah, I don't know.
Really?
Nah.
It didn't scream to you when you first saw it? You've passed it?
I enjoyed Matt Groening. Like, I liked Simpsons when I was young. I enjoyed Futurama when it first ran, and then they brought it back, and it just got worse and worse and worse. Mm. And, like, I really appreciated that they brought back more Futurama, but the spirit wasn't right.
Mm.
So I'm not...
You're not pumped for it.
Not particularly.
Okay, well, just try it one point. Rainy afternoon.
That's
see
right.
Where you go.
I'm not anti it in any way. It's just not one of those things that,
gotta watch.
I know a lot of people clamoring for it. I'm stoked for them and stuff, but it's just, yeah. Even Eric Andre's presence.
He's the exact sort of character you would think he is.
A fucked up imp.
That's close. Of he's a demon.
Okay, yeah, demon. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
What have you been watching?
All right, so I went and saw The Meg. I won't talk at length about it.
But?
I enjoyed it. It's a trash movie. Tonally all over the shop. Some pretty dodgy acting. But you don't go for the acting.
You do not go for the acting in this kind of movie.
It was just the right sort of cheese that I wanted.
Can I set a scale for you with this one?
Yes.
I'm going to give you... Sharknado, and I'm going to give you Jaws. Where in the mid, like whereabouts on a scale of there's 10 there.
Way closer to Jaws than Sharknado.
Great. Brilliant.
This is not one of those so bad it's good. Like it's not trying to be that type of movie. This was an expensive film to make.
Mm.
I felt they could have leaned into the violence a bit more. They do that old someone's about to be chomped. Oh, we cut away at the last second type thing. That happens a little bit. As is the case with any shark movie, there are points where it's difficult to kind of tell the scale of the shark because when you're underwater, there's not really any frame of reference of something next to it to give you perspective.
True. Which is why I assume on the poster, I remember it was the shark and this tiny little boat.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know. If you like a trashy film, go and check it out. It felt kind of...
It's been very popular.
It has been. It wasn't quite as self-aware as Snakes on a Plane, which I was hoping it would lean into that. But that said, the characters in the film have seen Jaws, comment upon things like that, and are aware of the conventions and tropes.
Okay, so it's still slightly, but yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And that leads me into the next thing I watched, which I've been enjoying this show from a few years ago called The Real Story, which is delving into the truth behind cinema.
Right.
Of films. And I've talked before about Jaws and Jurassic Park a few episodes. I watched one about Scream.
Now, that was, what would you say, about 98, something like that?
Yeah,
around there?
Yeah, I think 98's right.
How many did they end up doing?
96.
I watched
There's
three
four.
Of them. Okay.
There's the original three trilogy.
Yeah.
Then there was a fourth film, and I believe there's been a TV show as well.
Oh, wow.
But
really
I might be confusing that
on.
With Scream Queens.
Okay.
Anyway,
The postmodern nature of that I adore, and the fact that they lay out the rules. You know, the character Randy, he's watched all the horror movies. He says, "Here's what's going to happen," and that's a brilliant technique to use for a film, to lay out, "Here is what's going to happen. Let's watch that happen." It then happens because normally
in horrors, horror genre, you want audiences to not know what's going on.
That's right. You hide your playing cards.
That's where the scares come from.
Exactly. Whereas this messes with that by completely playing to convention, except for the important stuff around the killer.
And you get the dread, you get the feeling of dread because you know what's going to happen.
That's right, that's right. So I felt that the Meg kind of leaned into that a little bit.
Okay.
It could have gone further into it, but it did enough of that, which was great. Anyway, this show was really interesting because it was talking about, so in the film series, it's about Woodsboro is the town, and it's actually based on someone who was known as the Gainesville Ripper.
Oh, I didn't even realize it was based on fact.
So only elements of it. The kill situation, and you know, I'm nervous. I'm dancing around saying who the killer is.
Yeah, I know it's very old, but it's so old that people perhaps have grown up not having seen it yet.
That's right, and the twist of who it is so clever.
Yeah,
the guy it was based on, way more fucked up.
Yeah, I bet.
Excuse the French.
I bet.
way more. he killed teenagers and college students. Five people across 3 or 4 days, and
so he was full on.
Yeah, and body mutilation, decapitation, all this sort of stuff, like stage things to leave for the police. Mm. And then there was just this amazing story with it of he'd done this stuff and no one, like he would clean the crime scenes afterwards, so they weren't finding any DNA or anything that they could attach to
him. Very clever.
And then the same day this stuff happened, there was a bank robbery and cops were chasing after a bank robber. Didn't catch him, but the next day saw the robber and he fled town. And 3 years later, some similarly mutilated bodies showed up 3 or 4 states over, and they were able to determine from the way that the front door was jacked open,
right,
with a screwdriver, it was the same person.
That's amazing.
And then
small fact
discovered when they'd chased this bank robber, they'd run past a campsite which they assumed might be his, so they bagged up all the stuff and they put it in storage for 3 years. And then when this new information came to light, the police chief made them check through records from the last week before the murders happened in Gainesville.
Mm.
And that's when they found the bank robber stuff, and he'd recorded a confession onto a tape deck.
No way.
Yeah, like crazy man thoughts, recorded all of it confessing. When they had him arrested, he refused to confess to stuff until they brought a camera in and treated him like a celebrity, and he just wanted to be a star, and he had owned up to everything.
It's insane.
Really, really twisted. Great story.
That's insane.
Made me appreciate Scream a whole lot more. And you know, they talk with Joshua Williamson, I believe his name is, who was the screenwriter.
Mm-hmm.
Of one night he'd just been watching news and had seen a 5-minute story about this, and it had gotten his mind running of you know, someone picking off teens.
It triggered his creativity.
Yeah, well, it triggered that. And then talking with Wes Craven, that's when they came up with the idea of Randy and infusing the postmodern aspect of knowing that they're in a horror film.
You already know. So what was the TV show called again?
So it's called The Real Story.
Was that, you were talking about that with James Cameron at one point? Was that the same show?
No, not the same show. His one is The Science of Stories,
right,
of Science Fiction.
That's right.
Yeah, I've been really getting into these shows that are sort of dissecting films and the philosophy and the thought behind them.
That one sounds fascinating.
Yeah, so that was pretty darn cool. I watched a few more celebrity animal encounters.
Okay, so who are the celebrities that were on these?
So they put out, I think, 9 episodes at once. Mm-hmm. So that's 27 episodes.
That's a lot.
I'm going to pull out 3 that I thought were great.
Cool.
Rob Corddry, who you might know from Ballers.
Oh, yeah.
He's the Rock's offsider in that. He used to be on the Today Show and all sorts of great things.
Yeah.
He told a story of he was in Miami filming Ballers, mm-hmm. and his wife called saying that they were going to get a pet. She's deathly allergic to pets, but someone had discovered that these baby hairless African hedgehogs, and some guy was selling them out of the back of a car in a donut shop.
Doesn't sound weird.
No, so there's a great story about purchasing potentially illegal hedgehogs.
Yes.
Melissa Joan Hart.
Oh, yeah.
Has a story from filming Sabrina the Teenage Witch Down Under, the telly movie.
Okay, didn't know that was a thing.
At SeaWorld, where she was abused by a dolphin.
Oh, no.
Yeah, she broke the cardinal rule, which is if you're going to work with a dolphin, don't look it directly in the eyes, because somehow it just sets off fight or flight.
Really?
Yeah, it stops them being intelligent and just makes them cranky.
Okay. All right. I'll remember that.
Yeah. So she did that. And then this dolphin just abused her every time they tried to film the scene. Then went to swim across the pool and the dolphin dragged her under the water or smacked her with its tail, this sort of stuff. So that was pretty great. And the other one that I loved was Ed Begley Jr., who has been in so, so many things.
He's one of those guys whose faces just, you're like, oh, yeah, yeah, I can't tell you what you've been in, but
super
you've been in that.
Actor.
Okay.
Yes. I promise you, if you look up Ed Begley Jr., you'll go, oh, that guy! Yeah. So he was in a film in the 80s where he was playing a zookeeper, mostly working with big cats, but he needed to do a scene or two with an orangutan. And so he was being introduced to the orangutan beforehand so they could get to know each other. And he was told going in, he said, look, this orangutan, he's a hugger.
Okay.
He's going to grab you. He's going to hold you real tight. If you're calm and cool with it, he'll be sweet.
Yeah.
So he walks in, the orangutan pushes him up against the wall, grabs him by the ears, pulls its face in close, like, and then kisses him on the lips, and then held his hand for the next 3 weeks.
Oh my God.
They became best friends.
That's so cute.
Uh-huh. And the story, it didn't feel like it was going to go that way. It sounded like it was going to go some pretty awful way, but instead, best friends with orangutan.
I was quite worried about that story, actually, so I'm glad that that had a happy ending.
Yeah. Speaking of happy endings.
Yes.
Vanilla Ice Project is back for season 8.
That show has been around, obviously, for quite a long time. I remember when it first came out and I thought, what is that show about?
It's Rob Van Winkle just spreading that ninja love.
So that's what he's doing.
He does insist on calling people ninja, which is weird.
That is a strange thing, but it's Vanilla Ice and I feel like he's had so many years of being sort of a cult celebrity now that he can sort of be a bit eccentric.
Yeah, go ninja, go ninja, go. So, yes, this is a home renovation show from Vanilla Ice. He gives places the VIP treatment, which stands for the Vanilla Ice Project.
Oh, that's very clever.
Very clever, isn't it? He basically goes, he flips fancy houses. So he goes out and finds houses that are run down in really nice areas, pumps a million or two into the house, does it up really, really nice, and then flips it.
Do you think that this was stuff that he was doing before the TV show?
Yeah.
I think so too.
I think he's been tied up in real estate for a while because he's very comfortable with this stuff.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
And he has a team that he always uses. I know that. So that's the constant
same people,
of,
and it's one house per season.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's
so
great.
I'll be watching a bit more of that. And then for no particular reason, other than the fact that I'm getting excited for Crimes of Grindelwald later this year, I watched Harry Potter 8 again, which is Deathly Hallows Part 2.
And how did it live in 2018?
Oh, I rewatched it last year. I rewatched it all the time. It's a stonking great film.
Yeah.
It's very much a culmination of everything. For me, there's so much heroic Neville Longbottom moments. Neville is my jam. He's my boy. So him getting the big up is great. Mm. But the reason why I watched it is because the more I'm hearing about the Crimes of Grindelwald, the more I think we're going to be seeing some real shady shit from Dumbledore's past.
Right.
And through the first 7 movies, Albus Dumbledore is this holier-than-thou figure that Harry looks up to. And in this 8th one, we learn that he maybe had some not-so-great intentions for protecting Harry.
Interesting.
Have you seen this Harry film?
Oh, look, I saw it back in the day. So for me, and I didn't read the book, so for me it was sort of just like this one blur of Potter-ness.
Yes, okay. Well, look, when Harry gets Severus's tears, Snape's tears, and is able to look at the past and see what happened there. We get a lot that make Snape look great, and we learn for why he behaved in such a manner. It changes his character, colours his character completely.
Yep.
But in those same conversations and visions, there's a conversation that takes place with Dumbledore about why Harry needs to stay alive and perhaps Harry not needing to stay alive at a certain point of maybe he'd fattened Harry up like a pig.
Jeez, I need to watch that again.
Yes. So, yeah, for no other reason than I can't wait to see Johnny Depp get his fucking ass kicked. and Jude Law playing young Dumbledore.
Yeah, I like
that.
I like Jude Law as an actor. I think he is, because back in the day, like he was sort of the pretty English boy. Put him in the things. He's good. But at the same time, what he was doing was quite interesting films. And now, you know, it's several years later. He's actually been pumping out some pretty good quality stuff.
We've got Sherlock Holmes 3 coming next year.
Oh, great.
Yep, I'm ready for that.
You know what? I think I enjoyed the second one more than the first.
I will second that.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was so much fun. Mm. Oh, good. I'm glad that there's a third one coming out.
Become a watcher on Facebook. Facebook.com/WeAreTheWatchers.
Look, I saw a show, well, it was a movie actually, to All the Boys I've Loved Before. Lynn's actually suggested, right. I don't think she watched it, but she was like, this is blowing up Twitter. So I watched it yesterday, and it's on Netflix, it's a movie, and it's done an interesting casting choice in that you've got a family of girls, no mother. Mother has passed away years ago when they were young.
Right.
John Corbett is the father.
Sure, okay.
But the girls are all half Asian because the mother was Asian, which, fine, it's not really too big a reference. It's just that's what it is.
Yep.
I just thought it was an interesting storyline choice because the main character, Lara Jean, played by Lana Condor, who is amazing in it, by the way.
Sure.
She's clearly not half Caucasian.
Oh.
But the two sisters are, they all look nothing alike at all. And I thought, I'm not quite sure what the... It must have been an idea there at some point. And then I realized at the end that it was actually based off a book. And obviously the book may make more of a deal of it than it is. Because I thought, why don't you just get rid of John, the father, and just have him like an Asian father? It wouldn't have changed the story in any way, at least how the movie was based. But what a great movie. It was just a real feel-good teenage movie. One of her favourite movies, Lara Jean's favourite movies, is 16 Candles. So it's almost got that Molly Ringwald 80s feel to it. And I realise that I don't think that teen movie genre is that big at the moment. You know how it goes through phases, the 80s, yes, the late 90s, early 2000s, yes. Maybe it's starting to make a comeback. I mean, the storyline is pretty, you almost know straight from the first 10, 15 minutes how the story's going to go.
Yep.
But you don't care. It's like Scream. You don't care. You just want to go for the ride. You want to see the final outcome. And look, if you're a teen, watch it. If you're somebody who used to watch teen movies, either in the 80s or, you know, late 90s, 2000s, watch it because it's got that sort of nostalgia feel to it.
Sure. It's like slipping back into She's All That.
Yeah, exactly. And it's weird to see, you know, a guy who was Aiden, this hippie guy in Manhattan in Sex and the City. And then remember back in the day, he was also a real sort of hippie sort of thing in Northern Exposure.
Yeah.
Being this super conservative father who is a doctor, like the clothes he was dressed in, I'm like, I've never seen you in anything like that. Not even in my big fat Greek wedding were you dressed like that. It's on Netflix. The girl, the main character, Lana, the actor, is just, she's so endearing. The older sister is supposed to be 18. I reckon she looks about 30. Mm. I'm going to have to look into that, but I think she's a little older than she's supposed to be. They might have cast a bit too far. It was almost the Andrea Zuckerman of the cast.
Try harder, guys.
Yeah, exactly. We've got Fear the Walking Dead chat coming up in a little bit, of course, and our listener email quiz.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into this. It's called Either Or.
Okay.
This quiz. So it's sort of a quiz. It's more of a what's your opinion. Emily sent the quiz of sorts, we'll call it, to thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks, Emily.
And it's TV shows or movies, and you have to choose either or.
Okay.
So the first one is The Walking Dead or Fear the Walking Dead. It's hard, right? Because if we're talking right at the moment, I'd go with Fear the Walking Dead. But if we're talking about, you know, as a whole, I kind of feel like The Walking Dead was stronger in the first five seasons.
Yeah, I have to say Walking Dead because Fear the Walking Dead's had 1.5 good seasons.
Yeah.
And I can just lean back on the comics.
Exactly, the comics are there.
Okay.
Westworld season 1 or season 2? That's a hard one because season 2, you need to have watched season 1.
Very much so.
But season 1, I felt, was... It was contained enough, even though it had that sort of bang, this is the actual real world at the end. I still feel like it was a contained story that gave you enough answers so that by the end you're like, happy with that.
You've convinced me. Season one.
Okay, great. I did well. All right, this is going old school. Aloha Low or Keeping Up Appearances?
Keeping Up Appearances.
Yeah, me too.
100%.
When I was a kid, I really liked Aloha Low.
I'm free. is that Aloha Low?
Are You Being Served?
That's right.
Aloha Low was the...
I don't think I ever really watched
very
it.
Very carefully, I shall tell you this only once.
Nah, you can't compete with Hyacinth Bouquet.
She's so frustrating in the best possible way. All right, what about Pulp Fiction or Fight Club?
Fight Club.
I kind of think I'd go with Pulp Fiction, only because I haven't seen it for so long. Fight Club I watched recently, which I enjoyed, but I kind of want to go back to Pulp Fiction. So if I had to choose which one I'd watch now, I'd go Pulp Fiction.
Sure.
But Fight Club, no, they both had twists.
I love Fight Club.
You'll
it's
love
got Meatloaf. It's got what's his name?
Jared Leto.
Jared Leto getting the shit beat out of him.
Like full on Brad Pitt, probably in his most Brad Pitty.
The best use of the Pixies ever.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
What about Aladdin or Lion King?
Oh, Lion King.
I have to go Aladdin.
You're basing that just on Robin Williams.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I kind of like the songs more.
I see, but Lion King, you get Nathan Lane. You get Rowan Atkinson.
True.
You get Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Okay, you've won me over the JTT thing.
There's a lot of voice cast strongness in that, whereas you look at Aladdin. And
it's only Robin Williams. I couldn't tell you who the others were.
Oh, Robin Williams also plays a street vendor, so I can tell you two characters. They're both played by Robin Williams.
I've got a soft spot for Aladdin.
It's a great one. But I'm trying to answer these as quickly and as instinctively as possible.
All right, Simpsons or Family Guy? Family Guy.
Simpsons.
Do you think... See, for me... I'm sort of basing it on the fact that I haven't watched Simpsons for years and years and years.
I haven't watched Simpsons or Family Guy in years. I hate Seth MacFarlane.
Okay.
I have no time for that guy. Great singer. I really enjoy his jazzy swing albums.
But that's it.
But his sense of comedy and me don't really match.
Fair enough. Well, that's it. That was the quiz. Thank you, Emily. If you want to send in a quiz or a quiz of sorts, you can email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
I give that one 3 thumbs up.
Yay!
You can't see my mutant.
Yeah, I don't know how you got that. That's your magic.
Got bit by a radioactive hand.
That's going to get you every time. All right, we're going to the spoiler section. That was really good.
Thanks.
Spoiler alert. In 3, 2, 1. You have been warned.
Latest episode of Fear the Walking Dead was all contained in one house.
Yeah.
Pretty much. During the zombie cyclone or tornado? I don't know. Hurricane? What is it there?
Zomnado.
Okay, fair enough. That's great. I love it. 2 characters. I was worried this was going to be similar kind of episode 2, if you remember Carol and the Saviors.
Oh, see, I thought this was going to be Daryl and Beth all over again.
Oh.
And it wasn't even that good to me.
My main problem with it was if you've got zombies at the window.
Yes.
Scratching all night, why don't you just close the curtains?
That's a very good point.
There were just little bits of like that I just thought, if you're going to have a panic because the walkers are coming in, why go down into the basement that you already knew was half flooded? Why don't you go upstairs
and shut that door? Like she'd done. There was a door shut on the stairway. I did not care for this episode. And I mean...
I had a feeling it wouldn't be your favourite.
I know that this is a hot take because I looked online and a lot of reviewers were raving about it, saying it was one of the best episodes of Fear yet. I was like, what? Did we watch the same show? I don't care for Alicia as a character. Actress is great. If you haven't seen her in the 100, she's amazing.
People love her, and that's why they love her, because she's from the 100.
And they're pushing her as the new lead.
Yeah, of course they
are. And I'm struggling a little bit with Nick and Madison both gone, because I really enjoyed Nick's character, and I enjoyed the potential of Madison's character.
Me too, and the potential's now gone.
Completely gone, and they're pushing Alicia forward, and I just...
She's just angry.
And she doesn't feel like the same character as 2 seasons ago. Maybe
maybe a little bit of last season, but they've changed her a fair degree. And I know this is new showrunners, then making a stand with Madison gone. It's a whole new show. Make it a new show and get rid of that one last dangling character.
They don't want to because the fan base is too strong.
I know, but it just like, do you remember Denise on Walking Dead? How she got pushed randomly for an episode or two and then died.
Yeah.
I just kept waiting for that girl. Was her name Claire? Yeah, for Claire to get bumped at the end.
Oh, yeah.
So she was talking about the beach and look at the flowers.
I know.
I sat there going, shoot her.
Alicia's going to kill her.
Do it. Or plow into a tree. Kill yourself both.
This is what I liked about it. I like the fact that it was very insular. They had the threats of the storm and the zombies all around them, closing in on them. And they also had the threats of their... not relationship, but past.
Sure. Yep.
Encounters.
Yep.
Encroaching in them as well. So it was a very pressure, like it was a pressure cooker episode. Like everything was bubbling over. And I thought there was that bit in the basement where, is it Claire, was saying, please just do it, just do it. I don't want to be like them. I thought her acting was phenomenal. For such a young actress to pull off that, like the emotion, the panic, the you could see in her character's eyes that this had been bubbling up in her for ever since everything went to hell, you know? I really enjoyed that. You knew very early on in the episode that Alicia was not going to forgive her, but not do what Alicia would have done. Like, it was obvious she wasn't going to just shoot her and then wander off. Like, that wasn't it. The basement bit just got me. I'm like, why would you decide to go down there? What part of that, did I miss something that looked like it was an out? Did it look safe? I couldn't figure it out. I didn't understand. Why don't you go up? We've been shown up upstairs long enough to know that that was a way that you could potentially go. You killed that zombie. You climb down the tree and you go. We didn't get that.
No.
But like I said, I think for me that, emotional performance probably saved the episode for me.
Sure. Look, she was very good. I don't care about her character much. This episode helped a smidge towards getting me to care about her.
Is it because it made her seem more human?
A little bit. Look, there's two things that niggled me. One is I've been really enjoying Fear the Walking Dead once they started doing storylines they couldn't do on Walking Dead. So whether that's involving the new crazy characters or the crazy SWAT bus thing or, you know what I mean, those sorts of things. Whereas, as I said, this felt like a retread of when Beth and Daryl were on the road together and holed up for a night. Also, that whole storyline of Claire potentially committing suicide by zombie of walking up, that's how Carol dies in the comics.
Right.
So I've been waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for them to use that somewhere because it's so horrifying and such a messed up concept but so completely understandable that it just was like, oh, really? You're going to waste it on a character that we've seen for 10 minutes so far on the show?
Yeah.
And this was her first sort of big episode. It needs to be a character that we really know and we've seen broken.
And that's what sometimes I don't worry about it. I get disappointed by in The Walking Dead is that they start to build these characters up and you think they're building them up so that they can kill them next episode, where I'd rather have more of a build up of these characters. Yeah. I want to know more. I want to be invested more in instead I go, oh, they're building them up. I know how this show is. I'm not going to get invested.
Yep. Fear has played this card a couple of times where, so Walking Dead likes to build you up for someone to die and you know it's coming.
Yeah.
Fear does the flip of that. If they build up who you think is going to die all the time, end up chickening out of that and then suddenly kill a Nick or a Madison, and they'll do it in an episode 3, somewhere in mid-season that doesn't matter, this sort of stuff. So I felt like they played that card very obviously last night of continually putting Claire in the situation where she was about to die and then not going through with it.
Now, I saw the preview for next week and it seemed like we were looking at the aftermath of the storm. You were talking last week that you would like the storm to have lasted a bit longer, a few episodes, so that we could get these sort of understanding of how when nature and zombies, you know, try to take down humans. Do you think we'll get flashbacks? Because we don't know what happened to anybody else.
Yeah, look, if they hadn't handled doing a split up thing of
you know, focusing on 2 days story across 8 episodes on Walking Dead and seeing how poorly that was received by audience. I'd say that's what they're going to do here, so that we'd spend an episode with each of the pairings about what happened to them during the storm.
It doesn't seem that way.
I think
we're going to get flashbacks odd. as Alicia finds them.
That said, I think I might have misjudged last week on what the cool element would be. Like, I was very excited about the notion of them being inside a storm for that long. But it's still just as cool a notion of there's no EPA, there's no emergency services, there's no one coming ever to rebuild the things that got knocked down more.
And as Alicia said, things are only going to get worse.
That's right. So from a visual standpoint, they can now just have trash sets everywhere.
Yeah.
And there's less shelter.
There is.
You know, there's a lot of stuff that it definitely sets things up for Morgan again going, hey, maybe we should move on. Mm. And them going, yeah, all right. There's
Road
not much,
trip.
Yeah, it's not much to hold us here anymore.
I don't think they're going to focus on this, but you know how zombies go in herds? We saw that even, I think, in the second season, that a big herd is coming along. Well, with this happening, there's no herd. So things are all broken up and, they're very much just all over the place now. So perhaps individual walkers, they can predict what they're going to do, but now they can't predict the walkers.
Sure.
Can't think of the word.
Herd mentality.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It doesn't exist yet because now they have to herd back in, become a herd again. I don't think they're going to focus on that, but for me that would be really cool.
Sure.
But next week, obviously we've got another one, and I'm still interested enough in Fear to be pumped for it.
I'm excited for an episode focusing on some other people.
Yes, thank you very much. Yeah. I think that's going to do it for us this week.
Oh boy, howdy.
Yeah, I know, right? We've done a lot of talking. We'll be back next week. Don't forget Facebook. Go on to We Are The Watchers and give us a like and comment on some stuff.
Well, if you want to jump on iTunes and give us a 5-star review, that's cool. Any other star reviews, not don't bother.
That's right. If you can't be bothered with a really bad one, don't do it.
Yeah, give us some good ones so we get featured on the homepage.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. We want more people to see us.
Come on, we're 40. We're old.
We're very old and
wise.
People
on that homepage have got like 3 episodes getting featured. Give us some love.
Losers. Yeah, throw us a like and we'll wink in your general direction. Thank you, Tom.
Swing.